top of the news this evening is speculation concerning the real facts behind the Department of Health announcement about a radioactive spill supposed to have occurred yesterday at the state nuclear plant.
You will die, only to live again in a younger body. Then you can tell me if the operation was a success. I could easily kill you now, but I'm determined to have your brain!
You're listening to the Really Awful Movies Podcast, a celebration of genre cinema. Hi, my name is Chris, and along with Jeff, we talk about movies that aren't really awful at all. Horror, action, kung fu, musicals, post-apocalyptic, women in prison films, and much, much more.
Who's that? A girl in my class.
Zero friends. Super weird.
I thought we were friends. Why did you accept my friendship? Wait!
Student, Marina Mills committed suicide. There was a video uploaded. I urge you not to watch it.
I saw the medical report. It is insane.
So according to you, Miss Woodson, this video just magically appeared on your timeline.
I'm not posting this.
Did you try changing your password?
Yes, I've tried everything.
She's been back in my friends list.
You have no idea how crazy that is, do you?
That is what code normally looks like. Not this. This isn't code.
It's her.
From our downtown Toronto headquarters, here's episode 297, Friend Request.
Now, we should say this is the Friend Request on Netflix, not to be confused with the Friend Request on Amazon Prime, starring Martin Cove and some other...
Anthony Michael Hall.
This is, what did it come out, 2016?
2017, I believe. Mm-hmm. And this is follows in the spate of really extraordinarily mediocre, subpar social media-based horrors, the likes of which is one that would with which this would be confused,
Unfriended.
Which would be Unfriended, mm-hmm. which, I mean, is practically like... Casablanca compared to this, really. I mean, and I hated that one, but yeah. You could at least.
But you,
I mean,
you have this like this weird sort of predilection to watch all these social media.
I do, because it just shows a real dearth of imagination, mm-hmm. inability to see beyond your own time, mm-hmm. and I find that fascinating because there are certain things. I think they're conceptually afraid to go places that Cronenberg wasn't. So if you go somewhere that turns out not to pass, at least. You can say, oh, I had this idea and the technology never came to fruition, mm-hmm. but it's a cool idea. And I'm thinking
funny.
Existence.
I was going to say, years and years ago, when the internet was in its nascent form, I saw this movie at Midnight Madness at TIFF, Toronto National Film Festival, called Pulse. And it was a Japanese horror film, which has subsequently been remade into an extremely mediocre American remake. But man, oh man, this film scared the shit out of me. And in many ways, the premise was somewhat similar to this one. But it was so moody and atmospheric and tense and it's everything you want from a horror film. And it was so when I watched this movie, I was reminded how when the medium was so nascent, they were able to make such an incredible horror movie. Probably the only good horror movie to come out of the internet and social media and whatnot. And you're saying Existence by Cronenberg.
Existence because he took something that's disembodying and embodied it with something physical, like
now,
a weird controller in a video game that was like a piece of flesh that was almost like a liver, and you would stick your fingers into it and it would pulsate and it was like it was becoming part of you, which is not, it didn't exactly come to pass, mm-hmm. although people are getting chips implanted in them. But that's not really social media.
I'm going to admit that Existence is one of the few Cronenbergs I haven't seen, other than a lot of the ones you know he did with Robert Pattinson, like Cosmopolis and so on. I really have to see it. So wasn't that more about VR? It was,
but at least, I mean, it took a technology that was coming to the forefront and examined ways that it could be turn out for the worse, mm-hmm. or like how bad actors could disrupt it and fuck it up. But when you see at least that, I mean, he went with an idea of like a physical video game controller that was made out of, I guess, human parts and fused into you. That's a great idea, almost which he explored like in Videodrome.
A sequel to Videodrome, I was going to say. Like with the new flesh and everything.
I was disappointed when I saw it in the theater because I thought, oh, this idea is kind of silly and it didn't resonate with me. Mm-hmm. But then years later, I thought, yeah, maybe it still will. And the jury's out whether this kind of technology will come to pass. I mean, VR was seen as a little bit dated when it first came out. And now it's all over the place. And all it has now is a different name, augmented reality. So if you were to deal with that topic and broach it back then, and then people would laugh at you and say, oh, that never came to pass. But now it has, and it has a longer shelf life. What has no shelf life is taking an existing social platform and basing an entire horror movie around it. Because in 5 years, when this platform is maybe defunct, you will be able to relate, but it doesn't have any impact.
Facebook is not defunct. I mean, this movie is based around Facebook to the point they never call it by name, but it is Facebook. I mean, it aesthetically looks like Facebook, to the point that Mark Zuckerberg actually denounced this movie and wanted to pull from theaters. It's kind of
probably
ironic,
would have been a good thing
because nobody went to the theaters to see it anyway. I mean, I don't even recall this thing ever coming out. Do you?
Not at all. And it's funny because everything with his scandal and testifying in front of Congress and the Cambridge Analytica business, he's always in the news. You figure if he says something, mm-hmm. we will know about it. So it speaks to how the both the prominence of Facebook has diminished and the fact that, I mean, my God, like nothing could have saved this movie in the public eye, and not even, ironically, social media.
And the other thing that's kind of, well, not ironic, but kind of humorous about this is the tagline for the movie. Terror, is it terror is trending or horror is trending?
Yeah.
Because trending has to do with, at the time, Twitter.
That's what's funny. So they mistake the medium for which trending is the norm and the...
Well, that was just the hackneyed ad copywriters of which, you know...
I suppose, yeah. The disconnect between the actual content and what appears on the poster is not exactly... you know, a shock in the horror space, but really, you could have nailed that
Actually,
one down a little
like
bit.
A throwback, in a sense, to the little days of you know, 70s monster movies. So
well, they could have put someone who wasn't in the movie on the poster, but I think people are less forgiving of that as they were back in the day. But mm-hmm. it's funny for a movie that's based solely on the conceit of social media. This film is has so little to do with social media and so much to do with more traditional scares that it makes you wonder what they were even thinking. Because I was thinking, this is so back-end loaded with backstory mm-hmm. and traditional scares, like to the point where you don't even need social media. You could just have a social outcast who's stalking one of the protagonists. So I guess we could get a little bit into a discussion of the plot here.
What was the purpose of social media? I mean, just to show that this girl's a loner, has zero Facebook
There's
friends.
No purpose. Like, it doesn't... You can't generate a decent scare using...
Well, they had some of those hackneyed videos where you'd be watching it and be like, oh, it's a cute little puppy, and all of a sudden something jumps out at you. It's like a jump scare on Facebook.
It seems so...
Oh, you got to watch this video.
Yeah, but it's redundant because the entire medium of film is watching something happen in front of you that's a video. So to have someone watching a video on a video mm-hmm. automatically like diminishes the scare by half. Like, if you're going to show a snuff film that someone is ostensibly watching, show the snuff film, mm-hmm. not the cat video. So what we had was a... cat scare within a movie within a movie cat scare, which is, and a jump scare, which both of which we can't stand,
like,
but
Russian doll of cat scares.
But it's weird, and that's not a particularly useful way to generate fright in this technology. I think what's interesting about this technology is the stalking component and the fact that someone is continually harassing
that, because we did have we have this girl by the name of Laura Woodson, and she's a college student, university student, and she's rather popular. She's got 850 friends, which, as the movie shows later on, keeps going down, down, down. And that's supposed to be currency, basically, you know, to indicate how what your status is in society. Now that was, and that's basically all it was, but.
No, it's a social media caste system, because at her opposite is Marina, who's the social outcast.
Marina. She's demarcated on Facebook.
Not to get me confused with somewhere you park your boat. She has zero friends. Mm-hmm. And
Which is impossible.
Yeah.
I cannot have zero friends on Facebook.
But is there an equivalent of the MySpace guy with a thumbs up would be your friend?
I mean, okay, this movie did show that maybe she wouldn't have family, she wouldn't have acquaintances, but people don't even know you send you friend requests all the time, right? Maybe you need to have, I don't know, two or three friends, but it's
at least a few Russian bots.
I'm sure that exactly. Some Russian hooker bot must have at least sent her a friend. And this girl would be desperate enough to accept it. So it's impossible to have zero friends. But when she comes in contact with Laura by joining this class that they're in, which happens to be discussing social media and
it's a psychology class
and so on, exactly, has zero friends on Facebook.
And it's weird because the entire setup of the movie is...
And she has this entire account that she's built with zero friends. It's very sad and pitiful. And pathetic.
It is sad and pitiful, but plays its card right at the get-go because her demise is the start of the movie, and that her suicide and the fact that it was somehow uploaded on some nebulous university server, mm-hmm. and that people, the prof encourages people not to watch her suicide, which is like, who would really? It's not something people would do.
People, trust me, people watch.
People would who were not her classmate would, but you don't need to discuss it broadly in the university. But it just seems odd. Like, and then it shifts. This is a framing device for the narrative. Oh, one of your classmates committed suicide. And there's all these whispers, whisper. Who could this be? Like, what happened? And it's an interesting way to introduce the viewer to these people because we don't know any of these people. So we're expected to give two shits about someone who died,
right?
Who we don't know. And then we're introduced to these three, like, people who would be indistinguishable from those on the hills. Or one of these 2006...
Yeah, people with the names like Olivia and Gustavo. And I know the names, exactly.
Malibu, Orange County type of rich people, weird subculture in California.
Beverly Hills. What show was that from again? Was that the Hills?
I think it was The Hills.
I never watched The Hills.
I did. I'm embarrassed to say. And like, who cares? And I'm not meaning to be callous, but mm-hmm. who cares about someone who dies in whom no one is invested? So even less reason to care.
Well, I mean, is she really the villain? I mean, we're supposed to sort of sympathize with her, you know, and her. See, and that's where social media basically came into. I guess prominence, I don't know what word to use in this movie, because one of the things is that Laura and Marina do develop a bit of a friendship, and Laura becomes Marina's only friend. And Marina starts to friend on Facebook and in real life as well. And Laura is then stalked by Marina, who's commenting on everything she's ever posted. It's not terrible, but she's being stalked. She's commenting on everything she's ever posted, and the thing about Facebook, and one of the things that's been talked about a lot and written about a lot and studied, is the concept of FOMO, which is fear of missing out. You know, you're home alone on a Saturday night, you log on Facebook, you see all your friends doing things and you're not invited and you feel like a big loser. It's a psychological phenomenon, basically. So Laura has this upcoming birthday and she invites Marina. But then all her friends are like, why did you invite this loser? You know, she's just whatever. She's nothing. She's just a pitiful girl, all depressed, what have you. And so Laura then lies to Marina and says, yeah, we're not really having a party. I'm just having a little get-together with my boyfriend. But of course that's going to be, someone's going to tag her in a picture that's going to be posted on social media. And Marina finds out, and that's sort of the impetus to her mental downward spiral. She was already mentally disturbed to begin with, which then led to her suicide. So in some ways, Laura is complicit in the suicide.
That's
of
a
Marina.
Stretch, just because one of them is obsessed. Mm-hmm. She, I think, acted in pretty... I mean, she could have acted in better faith, sure, but she was being harassed by someone she barely met mm-hmm. about one, and saying, oh, I spent 2 weeks working on this present for you when her birthday came up. They hadn't known each other for a week. So she could have acted better, yes. But I mean, if you look at I Know What You Did Last Summer, or whether there's actual revenge that fuels it, I don't mm-hmm. know if Laura really, should she really deserve the brunt of being distant to this nutcase on social media. I mean, she hung in there and then finally deleted her from her friends.
Yeah.
She let it go for a little while. She even defended her.
Yeah, which she could not do. There was some sort of supernatural force. And this is another reason why, because you recommend this movie. And
in a manner of speaking, yeah. In the broadest sense, I recommended this movie.
Well,
I don't mean you recommended it to talk about.
You're not recommending it to say, go ahead and watch it.
No.
But you recommend it to talk about. And I'm watching this going, man, this is like, this is a supernatural horror, and Chris hates supernatural horror.
Yeah.
Why is he subjecting me to this? Because by some supernatural force is preventing the videos get uploaded to Laura's profile.
Mm-hmm.
The video that was the suicide. It was
the suicide of Marina, yeah.
And no matter what she could do, come hell or high water, she can't delete the video. She can't delete anything. And more stuff keep popping up on her feed that she's unable to delete.
And people are like, and her friends start saying, piling on and say, oh, I'm going to talk to the dean, as opposed to what maybe the police. Like, if you post a self-immolation on your Facebook wall, you think that...
In college movies, it's all about that dean. Damn dirty dean. I'm going to get you, you damn dirty dean.
And this is a rather unremarkable university. Nowhere near as good as Miskatonic University or the excellent Hudson University on Law and Order, SVU. This is a pretty crappy university with no... I mean, oh...
Is it by the Hudson River? By
I mean, Law and Order? Yes, yeah, it is. Okay, yeah, it's, I think it's essentially Columbia. But
another show I don't watch, but...
You know, it just speaks to the fact that given that Marina has been rebuffed by her ostensible friend, and then she goes to stalk her at the restaurant. Like, this doesn't need really social media to be part of it at all. Well, honestly, because there's no...
that this was happening, if not for social media, if not for somebody posting a picture.
Yeah, I suppose it could have happened elsewhere too, because everyone at this university seems to know one another. Mm-hmm. Which, like, this is the most absurd thing. Okay, I went to a college with 50,000 students. The professor in this class knows their students' surnames.
I know.
Like, you teach classes of 15 people. You probably don't know their surnames by, like, mid-semester.
I don't even know their first names by mid-semester.
And this professor is so heavily involved. Like, shouldn't he be doing, like, publish or perish research? Why should he know, like, the dummy fucking last names of these two, you know, Orange County nitwits in his classes? But then he admonishes them for being too internet addicted in his class. And it's just so, like, it's so hackneyed and so lame. But... it's just so weird because, yeah, again, like this weird schism in the mechanism. It's apparently Wiccan in code. Black magic that's coding for the program. And we find out about this through a programmer friend of Laura. He's a hacker.
I didn't really do much research into this whole Black Mirror magic.
But nor did I, no.
I wonder if the TV series Black Mirror took... because Black Mirror is all about the ramifications of technology in our society. And the cool thing about Black Mirror... have you watched the show?
No, but it's a great concept.
Yeah, I mean, the cool thing is the creator said, you know, this is a movie... or not, sorry, this is a series. It's an anthology series where the episodes could be taking place in the far future or tomorrow. That's how, you know, prevalent technology is in our society. Now, I'm wondering if Black Mirror magic is an actual thing to do with technology, and that's where Charlie Booker, the creator and writer of Black Mirror, got the title of the series.
No, I'm not sure. It's a great idea. Like, it's a great conceit to have a portal to another world, but that doesn't have to be through a laptop. Like, that's what's weird, is this is a movie that doesn't know what it is. There's a disequilibrium of whether it's a witch movie of a supernatural possession movie, or it's a psychological stalking horror through social media. It's neither. Yeah, it's more of a witch movie.
Sophomore teen movie.
Yeah, it doesn't... it's so off the rails. Like, is it Minority Report, or is it... no, I can't even think of like Ouija. Like, it doesn't... it's so at cross purposes, not knowing what the fuck it wants to be. And that's interesting in a way, because you can look into a mirror and it could be, let's see, out-of-home advertising that changes based on your particular demographic that matches you with someone else. And that will show you ads. It's freaky.
And all of a sudden this ad is in my face.
Yeah, but that's just a physical manifestation of what happens online all the time, because you're forwarded content based on your profile and you're being manipulated by third-party data sources to...
like, I'm like, talking like at pubs and stuff when you look.
Oh,
at
yeah, that's sinister too, yeah, and yeah, that's very Minority Report. But this movie doesn't really tap into that. The only time it does, of the ramifications or the problems of social media, is when you have the immediate piling on of people who just start dumping on Laura and saying you're a scumbag for posting this thing, and then they all pile on and she loses all her friends. That's the only part of the negatives of social media. Otherwise, the rest of it is just someone who, I guess, it's more of a hacker movie than a social media movie.
Like, to a certain extent, I guess.
I don't know. I don't think there's any way you can possibly scare someone with social media. Like, unless it's through sexting and blackmail. I think that's a really interesting...
sort of like an updated version of the You Got AIDS urban legend?
Oh, yeah, definitely. And that's where I think, like, the one social media horror, I think, is worth watching, and it's even that is not that good. But I think Cam is pretty interesting because it deals with pornography, online pornography, and cam models, webcam models. Okay. So I think that's interesting.
Yeah,
because
I saw that. That's the one. That was another Netflix movie, right?
It had some kind of veneer of sleaze, and there was a quite affecting scene where one of the protagonists has to disclose to her family, or is compelled to, that she's a webcam model. And it's very arresting and very moving, because that can be a very dramatic, difficult thing to go through, I can imagine, and that was really well handled. And you had a pervert who was maybe stalking one of these cam girls. So at least you had this sleaze. They went for the gusto. They had gore. They had something. They took a subset of social media, narrowed in on it, and focused on that one thing. Not just, there's no scare that can come from a platform that controls its content.
Yeah, and also I don't know what this movie was rated when it did have its brief theatrical run of maybe like
it did get an R, which is shocking. Like for whatever reason,
it was bereft of gore. I mean,
yeah,
it was basically your standard jump scares and supernatural
cat scares and your standard supernatural cliche of the beings without a face or with the super serrated teeth that open their maws, and it's just such a...
And I'm going to ask you, Mr. Boob Hunter, was there any nudity in this movie?
None whatsoever.
So this is an R-rated movie that did not deserve its R, did not earn its R rating. I wonder what it was rated R for.
It makes you wonder. And there's a weird crowbarred in, I guess, love triangle featuring this... What do you call him? I guess...
Well, that was Gustavo, I think, right? It was
No, there was a hacker who, you know, who's invested a lot in Laura, but she's rebuffed him. Mm-hmm. So it's unrequited love between him. Just some fat friend.
I wrote down the name Gustavo, so I want to include him somehow.
Like Gustavo Fring from Breaking Bad.
Exactly.
But it was just, there's some pre-med student and then vying for the affection of this Laura, and the two of them come to a head, and who cares? Like, the only reason she gets involved with the hacker is because, you know, she wants some help with it. And as if he's supposed to be able to go into the back end of Facebook and tinker with its code. It was so ridiculous. Mm-hmm. But he goes in there and...
Did she ever contact customer support?
She did. She tries phoning them, and it's dealt with very briefly, because if anyone has ever dealt with one of these large faceless companies, it's almost impossible to get any issue resolved.
Well, it's impossible to get any human interaction, first of all.
Yeah, maybe with good reason. But it's just like, this movie is all over the map, so slipshod and so scattered in its approach to what it really wants to do, that it ends up in its denouement having someone skulk around in an abandoned factory, which was done in CG, which is really weird. And that was the only bit, other than Gustavo, who you mentioned, his demise. His demise was pretty neat.
Good old Gustavo.
Gus met his maker by being supernaturally controlled and having his head slammed into an elevator like that against his will. I thought that was really cool, and it was the one scene that had any sort of impact. Of course, when his body is revealed to his friend, there's no impact. So they have these ball drops throughout the whole movie of things that could have been really great, that they were executed just offhandedly or piss poorly. There is a scene where Marina is shown to be bald because she has this psychological condition that involves pulling her hair out, and she pulls her eyelashes out.
It's it starts with a T. It's
trichinanimosis, whatever it is. Yeah. Like, and her bald dome is a great scene potentially. Mm-hmm. They flash her skull, and the rest of the whole school cafeteria is aghast because she's bald, and that's an interesting scene, but it's poorly handled. It's the only interesting thing in the whole movie, and you're stuck with like these ball drops and these potentially interesting things, and the whole backstory of this commune that she was part of with her mother, who was in this witch cult, and it was so elaborate.
The story of her birth and her gestation and everything was kind of shoehorned in. I thought it almost reminded me of Freddy Krueger in a sense. I don't want to spoil it, but by saying that, it kind of gives you an idea.
Definitely. It's these two different types of films that are almost one slams into the other at around the 45-50 minute mark, where they start
and
to...
And that's about the time I started to tune out, around the 45-50
minute
mark.
Yeah, and it's like, how much backstory do you need to build up for someone if they're... I mean, this is also the antagonist disappears for a large part of the movie, and it shifts gears.
I will argue she was a sympathetic figure.
You mean Marina?
Marina, yeah.
Yeah, to maybe. Like, your backstory would lead
it was,
you.
It was very tragic. I mean, there was really nothing to in her backstory to make you really feel the animosity towards her. But I guess her actions after her death made her into the villain. So.
I guess, but even her backstory was so anachronistic. Like, she's sent off to a boarding school that looked like a sanatorium that was stuck in the middle of the woods, and it didn't make any conceptual sense to me that this is the place that would make her turn to social media as a respite. Like, it didn't. I have an association with a sanatorium type building. It's supposed to be where demons lurk, and that's where bad mojo has happened.
Was it the sanitarium or sanatorium that turned her towards social media, or did she just turn towards social media because of the ubiquitous?
Well, it was because of the bullying that she incurred by going to the school, but it didn't resonate with me as, like, you have this character unto itself that this building. I would have thought maybe she'd been abused there, not that she would.
Well, she was somewhat abused. I mean, she was,
I guess, maybe corporal punishment, but they shoehorn that in at the end with maybe 10 minutes left, and then there's the demise of two of her antagonists, two of her bullies at her hands through witchcraft, that they just shove into the back end. This movie should have been reversed.
Yeah.
They have all this backstory occupying 40 minutes of runtime at the end, and then very little to do with social media apart from a little bit of hacking that really doesn't have much to do with social media. Well, she could have been hacked herself and had videos sent to her. It has nothing to do with social, apart from the piling on of the people angry at Laura for posting an immolation video, which wouldn't be posted on Facebook anyway.
Well, it's interesting because I guess now this is what I've learned, because this is what I've learned from you. And I, you know, at the beginning I thought, yeah, this movie sort of needed Facebook with the FOMO aspect and so on, and the cultural cachet of how many friends you have, that being the currency of how important you are, how popular you are, how well liked you are. But really, you're right. I have learned from you that it did not need social media. Now, if this movie was made 10 years prior or in the 80s, it would have been some other device like a Ouija board or something. But it really is. It's a supernatural witchcraft movie that happens to have social media shoehorned in. So that's what I've learned.
And they could have, again, used that two-way mirror in a more interesting way. But then they should have done it at the beginning and not as this part of detective work involving some really irrelevant character who is the hacker, who is just teaming up with Laura as she tries to piece together everything that's happening to her. And her friends have nothing to do with the revenge plot either. If your hypothesis is correct, that you're rebuffed by this person, and then you show the whole world your fancy birthday party that you didn't invite this weirdo to, then what do her friends have to do with it? And then she's hunting them down one by one, 10 Little Indian style. They're innocent. And I would argue Laura is innocent too.
They're obnoxious and annoying, and for that
they are.
As the hallmark of any slasher movie, which this is not, it's a supernatural horror movie, but those that are obnoxious and annoying deserve to die. They're innocent, really.
But, I mean, poor Gustavo, what did he do to incur any of this wrath? Like, okay, some of them said...
He was Gustavo, I don't know.
Some of them said, oh, why do you befriend this girl? She's a weirdo. Mm-hmm. And that's... I could make a solid case for that. She is a weirdo, and maybe she should be shunned. Because she is volatile, and she's obsessive, and she's a stalker. So maybe she shouldn't be dealt with. She needs mental help, and she needs an intervention.
I'm somebody that always identifies with the outcast, with the loner, et cetera, et cetera. So I sort of identified with Marina.
She's a stalker, and she's an abuser.
She's
a rotten person.
How's she an abuser?
She sends them all this awful video, like unsolicited video. And that's quite upsetting. So you could have had a man doing this with a dick pic. It doesn't matter what it is. You're sending someone...
So she's a cyber abuser.
She's a cyber abuser who's sending people, I mean, awful videos that... it's not like, oh, hey, she could have prefaced it by saying, oh, I have this video of a pregnant lady with stuff etched into her belly, you know, weird witchcraft sorcery shit. Oh, let me see that. No, it's she's sending Laura these awful videos of people with their eyes gouged out and all this terrible stuff. Like, she's nasty.
Well, she's a witchy woman. So.
Witch-a woman?
Witch-a woman, exactly.
I learned that there was a, like, these dumb movies, like they... again, the professor knows their names, which is silly. They reference the DSM, the Diagnostic and Statistical Manual of Psychiatric Disorders, exactly, in order to make themselves seem like an elevated, smart film.
Well, they're talking about whether or not internet addiction is worthy of inclusion in the DSM-4.
I would say so.
It actually is, I believe. Now, I don't know what number they're at now, 5, 6, whatever.
I'm not sure, but if it isn't, it should be.
It totally is. It totally is considered to be a legitimate psychiatric disorder.
Yeah and FOMO... I almost want to, like, you know, jump on the meme, like, no homo, like, no FOMO.
I don't know this meme.
No homo.
No homo.
Like, you know, and it's something, you know, potentially you're gay for someone, but you're not a homo. Like, we're not gay, or you go, like, oh, he's handsome, but no homo. Like,
oh, okay.
Okay, so no FOMO.
I'm
but,
aware of this one, but anyway.
It's social media envy is a real thing, and I was doing a little bit of research because I read this interesting book called 10 Reasons to Delete Your Social Media by Jeron Lanier, who was a Microsoft researcher and one of the founders of VR, and he is quite an interesting Silicon Valley character, and he's saying you should really, for reasons of this data mining for your own well-being and happiness and social envy, you should really delete your accounts. And I've scaled back big time because I've found that I've become envious of people's vacationing on through Instagram, and I find that I've been since we went to England together, I haven't been able to travel as much, and prior to that, I'd been unable to go on a vacation for 4 years, and I'm seeing all these people with their glossy...
Of course, when people post on social media, they only post their best selves, you know. But what you're doing is you're comparing your lowlights to their highlights, whereas their highlights are sort of artificial and facetious and whatever. Not facetious.
Factitious. Phony baloney. Phony baloney. Like,
so you're comparing your lowlights to fabricated highlights, and it's just a recipe for psychological disaster, really.
It's so weird. I got caught up in this video series, a vlogger series. I don't know how. I do know how, because my YouTube feed is being manipulated to show me things based on my profile. So I was started to watch
this. Almost sounds like the premise for a horror movie right now. YouTube feed is being manipulated.
Yeah, so this is a woman from Australia who moved to Italy and advocates moving there and offers tips on how Italophiles, and I would include myself in one, although I come by it honestly because I'm a half Italian. I love the country a lot, and I've thought about moving there, and I have a very strong cultural affinity to it. And she's talking about how you can get by living there, and she's talking about her life in Tuscany and going to Rome, and she has this apartment and she grows these tomatoes. I'm like, I'm very envious, especially as we got a dumping of snow. It's about a foot high today, and it's I wish I could be in the Tuscan hillside enjoying a glass of Chianti, and I'm experiencing
just
strong...
Just don't go to Del Boca Vista. There's no room in Del Boca Vista.
And I'm finding myself, because that's next on the list of places to go to, and I'm struggling with a young child and whether... like, I'm going to Mexico shortly.
You are going to Mexico, yeah.
And I'm trying to figure out how able we are to accommodate a young infant to be able to travel with him, and that this will determine further vacations that we take. And
you got a passport, obviously, for your child.
And so this stuff, I'm extraordinarily envious of these people. And a friend of mine who we hung out with in London, who was our tour guide, she is living the life of Riley. And I look at her posts. I love her to death.
She moved elsewhere.
She's still in London, but she jet sets to Switzerland. She was in Dubai. She was in Naples, Italy. She's in Germany every other weekend. And I'm so besotted with jealousy. What's weird is that people would be envious of us as well, because we're living in a pretty exciting big city, and we live downtown pretty much, you more so than me. We can do all sorts of things, and people in a small town will maybe look at our profiles and say, hey, we're doing interesting things. It's all relative. We're writing books. We got another one coming out. We're going to disclose more about it.
I can't wait till it's going to be really good. More about it,
It's just like
our hands are tied right now by our publisher, but sooner than later we will be disclosing the content of our
it's just like someone else's life is always better than yours, and
that's often perception, right? Like, we really don't know what goes behind the picket fence, so to speak. Like, I'm thinking of, like, you know, Blue Velvet by David Lynch, where everybody lives in these beautiful white picket fence homes, but there's a lot of shit going on behind there.
That's fine.
When you dig underneath.
I guess. Maybe it's
And that's what social media is. It's, again, it's not genuine. It's people curating the images that they're going to post.
And they, to an extent, they do that fairly well in this film, because Newkirk, did I write it down? I think it's Newkirk University. These are people who, a la The Hills and
Not The Hills Have Eyes, but
The Hills Have
just The Hills
eyeballs the on hills social have media. Eyes. The hill, yeah. These people are all enviable in their to their own extent. Like they the restaurant they go to celebrate Laura's birthday. And this is more of what we've learned here. It's, I mean, I think it's Malibu. It's right on the ocean. It's stunning.
Yeah.
I would love to eat there. Like, you have all these touch points of class envy and money being spent. And
that's another thing, too, with Marina. She doesn't fit in
socially
nor economically with this group.
I guess could work as an advantage, but they don't mine that territory very well at all. And it's weird. One of the fallouts of social media has been one type feeding off another. There's been rappers that have been born out of Dr. Phil. So there's one called Bad Barbie.
Bad Barbie.
Who spawned the catchphrase.
Danielle Bregoli, I believe.
Danielle Bregoli, Cash Me Outside, bitch.
Yeah.
So she became a meme. She became a success story based on bad behavior. And so now you have this feedback loop of reward, punishment, social media being now rewarded for something that should be punished.
Mm-hmm.
And another character who was bemoaning the fact that her parents give her $2,000 a month of allowance, and she has videos where she spends money in Beverly Hills, and then that gets tons of upvotes, and you get to see these people's Palace of Versailles, Louis XVI, kind of Marie Antoinette, lavish spending lifestyles, and no one can compete with that. So that's another thing. So it's one thing, the cachet of traveling is, it's not a commodity, although it kind of is. Oh, here I am in Jamaica, look at me, I'm so cool. And then the other of just a pure commodity of, oh, look at my Gucci handbag that costs $800.
Mm-hmm.
So all this terrible envy and social media, this is stuff that could have been explored through the Marina character because she's an outcast, but none of which is. There's nothing, no social media value in this film that's purportedly about it. Another thing I learned, the final thing, is that there's two references to Streetcar Named Desire. I don't know why. They're posters in the wall of their flat, these students, and there's no reason for that. Is there a Stanley Kowalski in this movie? No. It doesn't fit in the mise-en-scène of anything.
Exactly.
Like,
these are not kids that would be interested in classic cinema.
No. So all you're doing is taking some predisposition or predilection from the director. I think it's Simon Verhoeven. I don't know if he's related to the other Verhoeven.
I doubt
Paul.
He is, but I want to know.
Maybe.
Be,
and you just stuff it in there for what? At least in Stranger Things, it's imbued with 80s memorabilia and stuff from the time and the Spielberg affinity. Hell, Dawson's Creek, the guy's a wannabe filmmaker.
Spielberg fan and everything.
Over and over, Streetcar, whatever.
What was the other reference? You said there was one.
There was a few Streetcar Named Desire posters, and it kept appearing above characters' shoulders and whatnot.
I didn't notice
the relationship between the friends is not developed at all. They're totally irrelevant people. Gustavo, you may love him. He's a corpulent fellow who meets his demise in a great way, but there's no interest in him. He's a fringe character who does a toast in the restaurant, and that's about it. There's nothing. He does nothing that should have incurred the wrath of Marina.
And it's interesting too how Marina really latches onto Laura and really wants, I guess, I don't know if it's because Laura reached out to her or whatever, but it becomes a pseudo social media single white female before.
Yeah, they could have had some parasite host relationship. They have none of that. Like, if Marina
was
this rebuffed.
Close to singing a Kiss song when you said Parasite.
Oh my God! I just thought,
Parasite was also the Best Picture winner this year.
Yes, it was.
It was a wonderful movie. I highly recommend it.
Oh, well, maybe we'll find a time to talk about it. But if she were rebuffed and the subject of ridicule and something on, so there's nothing connecting these two characters. I think she took advantage of her good nature, Marina
did,
and then stalked her. And it's those, Laura behaved badly by posting on social and maybe rubbing it in her face a little bit, but there's nothing that connects these two.
But it wasn't nothing Laura who posted it on social media. It was one of her friends who posted it, actually.
So they just tagged her.
They tagged her.
Okay, but even, it just didn't, I don't know. There's just not enough invested in in a revenge plot that you would have in the, again, the likes of I Know What You Did Last Summer. And it's weird because the protagonist here looks a little bit like Jennifer Love Hewitt. She's got that skinny face and the brunette hair. She's kind of conventionally pretty. But it turns out, actually, after all, that I've learned...
You learned quite a bit.
Lots of stuff. So, ultimately, what I've found very dissatisfying about this whole genre is the fact that it can't escape itself. It can't step beyond the technology and talk broader themes. They don't touch on broader themes. So whether it's pound horror, hashtag horror, horror.
That's one of the worst horror movies I've ever seen in my entire life, bar none. I think I made it through 30 minutes before I literally vomited.
It's bad. Unfriended uses the conceit of a Skype multi-discussion with different squares. So that's an innovative form of storytelling, but not one that I find particularly exciting to watch, but at least give credit to where credit's due. They used a different format to tell the story of people interacting with one another. But none of these things take a platform and talk about the broader implications, other than cyberbullying has been around since, for what, 15 years? Since the advent of the internet, you have people on forums bashing one another.
True, yeah.
The Amanda Todd case, Canadian girl.
Yep.
But there's none. It doesn't go there enough. There's nothing that it does. It doesn't envision anything beyond what it is. It's stuck in the mud, stuck in the morass of one platform. It's stuck on Facebook, yeah. And it has no broader implications.
I kind of love it when you hate a movie and you just go on these rants.
I find them
eminently entertaining. So.
You said it wasn't rippable enough. Like, there were not enough moments to dump on it, and that's true. It's not shitty enough.
Well, it's an aggressively mediocre movie, and that's the whole thing. Like, you know, like it.
It I'll has
just give
you
my
really
star rating right now. Like, I just really dislike
one and a half.
This movie.
Maybe like
a star.
Two.
Really, maybe okay. One and a half. Sure, whatever.
If you would have taken, there's
the
so much
was,
fodder
like, a glimmer
for
of something in the ending, which I kind of was okay, you know. And so I'll give it one and a half.
Well, cyberbullying is an interesting concept, and that's it's not really addressed. There's no development. There's no the fact that your antagonist dies in the first 10 seconds and then you don't even know who she is or care. It's just poor storytelling. Mm-hmm. It should have been reversed. Mm-hmm. You could have had someone whose development was stunted by social, and then you could see how she developed poorly and how her social skills were maladapted to her circumstances, and then you see how
like
she set off.
My Fair Lady concept, where all of a sudden, you know, her friends embrace her and they turn to this popular Beverly Hills socialite, and then all of a sudden that.
Oh my God, that's excellent.
Well, you know, I mean, you're the one always throwing out ideas and concepts, and here I am now throwing out one of my own. So,
well, they could have maybe done more Bronte sisters, where they had a real develop the social conceit behind this instead of just having a bunch of rich people. Those people aren't even flaunting it that badly. They're not social media stars even.
They're not influencers.
No. All they are is people who have a good rapport with one another.
I think this was made before the era of influencers, which is basically in the last year or two when I started hearing about influencers all the time.
I guess, but they're not influential. And that would have made people, they could have faced scorn or backlash from their classmates and co-eds. They're just normal kids.
Within the confines of the college, would you say that they were influential?
No,
they're
not known.
No?
And that's the cliche of college movies too, that regardless of how big the student body is, you could have 25,000 students at some state school. There's always some person everyone knows. Oh yeah, that's Mary. Like, no, that's not what happens. You're a faceless binary, whatever, digit drone in this. I had a 9-digit student number. You might as well have been in prison in my university. It's massive. You're just a number, and you're just a nothing.
Now we're talking about York University, right?
University of Toronto.
Oh, okay. But
York is the same. Yeah, it's your alma mater, and it's combined. They have 120,000 students. You're nothing there.
Yeah.
And so they could have played with
that. 300-6438.
Oh my God.
I still remember it. I don't know how. Now, is that a kid giving out my social insurance number? I don't know.
That is disturbing. Did you get enough yard time at York University? I don't know. Like, which gang did you hang out with?
That might be my employee number. I don't even know. It's early in the morning.
That's disturbing.
Right now. Yeah.
But anyway, this movie is at cross purposes at all different types of. It does not know what it wants to be. It doesn't satisfy any of the requirements for any of these social outcast type movies, like or high school type banter movies like Election. It's just it's sags in every respect. It doesn't meet anything. It's a poor witchcraft movie. It's a poor supernatural movie. It tries to draw in some of those cliches. It's a poor bullying social outcast movie. It's wrong on all fronts. The performances are pretty mediocre as well. There's a pretty good protagonist who's Laura, who's okay. The rest of it is just flat. Was
your stereotypical shy,
goth,
depressed goth girl,
and for some reason, and who rolls up her sleeves so that her hands don't show. What's up with that?
Yeah, and the hood always demarcates depression whenever someone has a hood over here, right?
So, I was thinking that
thing. Depression, or like, I'm a thug, you know, if you're wearing a hood over your dome.
What was it? Was it Bully, that Gus Van Sant movie? Is that what it... What's the one in the high school
Elephant?
With the... Elephant, okay, yeah.
It was a documentary named Bully.
Oh, okay. So they could have done more of a high school... they could have done more of a Carrie. They could have Carrie-ized this movie. They could have done something with it to pit these two people against one another, but there's nothing connecting them other than a bit of Good Samaritan. And then she gets, I don't know, reproached for that. By this cyber stalker. There's nothing. It's just flat all around. I'm going to actually lower my...
Good.
Yeah, I'm going to give it a 1 star. Yeah. Maybe 1.25.
Because I'm thinking, like, the way you're just vehemently shitting on this movie.
Well, there's, like, 2 good scenes, maybe.
Yeah.
And so, but those were not well handled,
yeah,
because...
So that's worth a star.
That's... Yeah, I guess so. And
give it 1/2 star for each good scene, and...
Oh, another thing I learned. Oh, my God. We're learning so much.
Chris, man.
Another thing they could have built
you
up on is...
this movie.
There's the wasp scene where apparently witchcraft is associated with this insect.
Now we're talking about, actual wasps.
And there's a wasp nest, and then one of the characters meets their demise through being swarmed by these wasp hornet things. That's a great idea. It's an interesting concept. They drag it out at around the 59-minute mark, and this is an 80-minute movie, and then all of a sudden, oh, this particular type of Black Mirror witchcraft involves wasps. Like, it doesn't... it's tacked on in the end. With 20 minutes left over, they're shoving in every piece of exposition in the kitchen sink to try and make sense of the preceding 60 minutes. It's ridiculous. It could have been handled really cool. Maybe make the wasps the beginning of the movie, mm-hmm. where you're like, holy shit, this person's face is eaten by wasps. What the fuck happened?
Yeah.
We later find out it's part of witchcraft. Then you draw the viewer into
it. So the structure of the movie
is totally off.
Totally off,
You could have taken something from the end, shoved it in the beginning. It was just
really
poorly constructed.
So I think it's safe to say that we're not recommending Friend Request. We're not friending it.
We're not friending it. We are ignoring the friend request.
It hasn't influenced us in any way. It's not trending in our world.
It is not.
It's definitely not getting a like from us.
Maybe we'll add a few friends to our Facebook page and check us out on the Really Awful Movies. We post there about the types of movies we're going to be podcasting. Continue to check out. Well, it would be tacky at this point to recommend that listeners follow us on various social media platforms.
We're not going to. Okay.
Yeah, no, but definitely purchase our book. Go on to Amazon and buy a copy of Death by Umbrella, the 100 Weirdest Horror Movie Weapons.
And really follow us on Twitter and Facebook. I had to say.
Sure, what the hell? We might as well.
We promise we won't cyber stalk you.
No, we promise your data won't be used for nefarious third-party means. Well, we promise it, but Facebook and Twitter maybe don't make those kinds of promises. Yeah. Read the fine print. Check out our... episodes upload if you're listening pleasure every Friday, and we'll talk to you soon.
Take care. Thank you.